Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 57 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer. Bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming. News and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, role-playing games, miniatures, wargaming, and all other kinds of stuff you'll play with boards and cards and stuff like that.
Not football games.
Unfortunately, not football games here in Indianapolis because of the damned Colts.
Indeed.
Couldn't get it done.
That's right. So so you non-football fans are very excited because you won't get your Colts 30-second updates every
That's
two
right.
weeks.
Yeah, you don't get that now until September, right?
That's right.
Oh, well. Baseball season starts in just a couple of
that's
months.
Right. Right. The Reds are going to be playing here before too long.
And the Rangers.
And the Reds.
But anyway, we're coming from to you from the beautiful and snowy gaming capital of the world, Indianapolis, Indiana. And we've been on a little bit of a hiatus, holiday break, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's been a good couple of months now, right? Month and a half.
Yeah, month and a half. We've dug out of the snow, and we're ready to get back on schedule, and we're going to be talking about New Year's resolutions.
That's right, because I'm sure that by this time in the year, most of you gamers have made that resolution to go to the gym, and now you're not going to the gym anymore, right? Because boy, there's a lot of people at my gym that's kind of the way it is. Like when the first week, because I've been going to the gym the last few months, mm-hmm. I could not get a treadmill.
So you Crazy. Become the gym snob. You're like,
I'm not the gym.
All
snob.
These dang people come in.
I got lambasted on my Facebook for that,
rightly so.
People think it's just the fact that I've never experienced that before. I've been that guy, uh-huh. but I've never seen those guys and not been one of those guys.
Remember the little people, John.
I want to be a little person. That's my whole goal here.
So, let the commoner on your treadmill once in a while.
All right. Well, what are we talking about today other than the New Year's resolutions?
Well, we have the Game On inbox and our robust rundown of what we played in this long break. And that's going to start
right now. All right, so we're going to begin our episode with the rundown of the games that we've been playing over the last few weeks. And Cody, go ahead and hit us with it. What have you been playing the last few weeks?
I've been playing a lot. I'm going to hit on the highlights because I've been spending a lot of the winter months here holed up playing. I've got my little handy iPhone app with BGG games I've logged. I know John's very impressed with that.
I've been the same way too about not the phone thing. That's stupid, but the being holed up inside with the snow outside, so lots of games to play. I'm trying to make some hostile comments so I can rile you up a little
bit.
That's
fine. I'll just sit in my ivory tower and tell you what I played.
Go for it.
Now first alphabetically would be Seven Wonders.
Is that first out?
Because
the numbers
you do
come
numbers,
first,
and then yeah,
and then, okay,
yeah. So you know that's the new hotness right now. It's hard to find, and everyone's talking about it.
It is.
Myriad Games Presentations just did one of their session impressions over it, and yes. We played it.
We did four player game.
Uh huh. And we have very differing views on it.
And are you really surprised, listeners? But so okay, what is your opinion of Seven Wonders?
It. I see why people like it. I can appreciate it. Like, it's not a terrible game, but to me, it just feels like half of a game. You know, is the whole game is based around drafting, and there's some interaction with the player to the left and right of you. But to me, I guess I just have Magic too much ingrained in me. Yeah. I feel like, okay, I've drafted all this stuff. Now we play.
Now you do something with
it. And that's the end of the game. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that's true. That is a very different. That mechanic is just very, very different.
But in its defense, it has the Dominion thing going for it where if you have a bad strategy or you don't like the way you played, you know, just wait half an hour and the game's over. You can start again.
Well, and I must say that the four-player game that we played did not hit as well as far as the way I felt about the game. It just didn't go as well as when I was playing at BGG Con. And part of it was because I was looking across at you and you looked like you needed a bucket to throw up in because you were having so much fun. but I think also having more players, I think makes it more social because it's like when you get the cards in your hand and you're trying to pick which one, it's not a huge bad, a huge brain burning decision to figure out what card you want. I mean, once you figured out I'm going the philosophy route or the science route, you know, you kind of know what you're going to be picking out. It doesn't take that long. And so in a seven player game, everybody's doing that at a different rate. Mm-hmm. And so people, you know, when you're done picking your card, you're just kind of BSing with the person next to you or whatever. And then it's like, okay, is everybody ready? And then you turn your card over. So that becomes a more social part of the game. We also played this game pretty late at night after we had already played a really long game that we'll talk about in a second. And so I think that might have been an element to it.
Yeah, I definitely want to give another shot because I think there are some really good elements in it. I think, you know, atmosphere may have played something in that. But I'd like to play that maybe with some more people and give that a shot or two more.
Okay. What else?
Well, we're speaking of the big game.
Is that the next one alphabetically via?
No, it's not. But I'm going to move it up just because it fits. Sid Meier's Civilization, another new hotness game. This one from Fantasy Flight, from our good friend, close personal friend Kevin Wilson.
That's right. He's like a brother. He's like a long lost cut. He's kind of like a.
He's kind of like a guy we played a con game with once.
Yeah, he's like some guy we don't know.
Yeah, pretty much. But we played that. We played a full 4-player game. John did an excellent job teaching the rules.
Thank you.
Spot on.
It's a tricky one.
Yep. And what did you think?
I liked it. I liked it a lot, actually. And I liked it so much that we've got our local con, Hoosier Con, coming up in
I'm
March.
Drinking out of my Hoosier Con cup right
you
here.
You are. Yes, the nice look bright yellow Hoosier Con cup there.
Refreshing.
Cola, right?
Yes.
And I am going to actually be running a game of Sid Meier's Civilization at Hoosier Con. So if you happen to be going and you wanted to go to HoosierGamers.org and sign up for that, then is it Hoosier or is it HoosierCon.com or...
You can go through HoosierGamers.org.
Yeah, go to HoosierGamers, WHOSYERGAMERS.org.
Yep.
And you can sign up for it. But anyway, I liked it so much that I'm going to be running a game of it. But I loved pretty much all the mechanics in it. Of course, the components were fantastic in the game. It is a long game. And I think we actually, I think, played a pretty short one for being a learning game. And we played the full game. There's a way that you can do like a intro or demo game or something like that that's built in.
I don't think you need it, at least the group we had.
Yeah, the group we had were pretty dyed-in-the-wool gamers, seasoned gamers, But it took us, I think, 3.5 hours to get through the whole thing, even with learning. So not too bad.
Yeah, the length didn't bother me at all.
I love the way that you have different paths to victory. You can have an economic victory or a political, not political, a cultural victory.
Military
victory, or what was the other one? It was a... There's four.
There's the scientific.
The tech tree. The tech tree. If you get to space flight, which is the level 5 tech, then you can win the game that way. So I really liked it. Cody, what was your opinion on it?
I liked it okay. I can't believe I'm saying this. I think I like Through the Ages a little bit better, but I think I definitely need one more play of both.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I was the sourpuss that night because I didn't really like either game. Easy. I could see the potential there. I think it needs a few more plays for me, but through the ages, while a little more dry, I think it's a little more elegant because I think the Fantasy Flight Civilization can be a little clunky, you know. It's a Fantasy Flight. It's, you know, I still like their products, but it seems like they're sliding down a little bit.
Really?
Just the last couple of games I played of them,
just too much unnecessary complexity.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not afraid of complex games, but it just seems like there's a lot of unnecessary complexity to them that you know, I look at companies like, you know, Days of Wonder or well, that's the one that comes to mind, is, you know, they can have a complex game but still keep it pretty simple.
Yeah,
so I don't know.
What about two? I mean, we played 4 players. I wonder if it would be different with like just because it plays 2 to 4, maybe a 2-player game.
Maybe. I mean, I think you lose a little of the civilization aspect with 2 in a game like that. I don't know. It just seems like you're playing a weird war game, like a watered down war game.
Yeah. It's true. Because I guess it also depends on what path to victory people pick. Because in our 4-player game, you went for the cultural victory with the good old Abe Lincoln and the Americans.
Right.
I was Mao and the Chinese. We were going for the economic victory.
I
won, by the way. I forgot to mention that. at the very last minute.
Sideswiped me on the very last turn. I was getting ready to win.
It was an exciting ending because I basically needed one particular great person to come out onto the board to give me an extra coin. And if I hadn't gotten that, then by the time the turn got around to Cody, he would have won the cultural victory.
Dang.
But then we had the other 2 players. I think they were both trying to go for a military victory. Is that right?
Yep.
So I think that interplay made it even more fun for me. If everybody was trying to go for an economic victory, then we would have holed up in our own little corner of the world, probably not had much conflict, and you know, then it, I don't know. So I think having that variety, it just sort of naturally happened in our game. I just wonder what that would be like if you had two players and they were both going for culture victories.
Yeah, you know? It could get kind of boring.
Yeah, well, I'll see you in a couple hours over there on the other side of the table. Yeah. So what else besides Seven Wonders and Civ?
Okay, a few kind of smaller games that I want to mention. There was an old cheap-ass game that was eventually renamed. It was called Before I Kill You, Mr. Bond.
Okay.
And it was renamed to James Ernest Totally Renamed Spy Game because whoever holds the license for James Bond, I guess that hit too close to home.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I know. But it's basically it's a really light kind of press your luck bluffing sort of a game where you all play super villains and there's all of these kind of secret agents you can play onto your lairs to capture them and get points, but you can press your luck by playing there's doubles of each card, like a lot of the foil cards have letters on them. Mm-hmm. And you know, say I have a letter J, I can put that down and try and double the score I would get. It's always a supervillain taunt. So say I have the letter J card, and I'd say, "Before I kill you, Mr. Bond, let me walk away while you slowly descend in this slowly motorizing, dripping." I don't know.
Something.
Yeah.
Something cool. Anyhow.
But it's basically some supervillain taunt.
Oh, nice.
And you play it, and then
have to say it that way too.
Oh,
when you play it?
Yeah. Otherwise, it's no fun. And then, you know, one of the other players, if they have that other J, they could play it and cancel it. And you can keep trying to double your score as much as you want until someone foils you. So it's a real light game. It's sure. Not a lot going on. But I think you can still get it under James Ernest's Totally Renamed Spy Game. But that was a lot of fun.
Cool.
I also played a Bicycle.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I own a copy of that.
Mm-hmm. Before the Colts game, a couple buddies of mine set up a big, using two boxes worth of track. Bicycle set. So it's okay. A lot like pitch car. I think we've talked about it on the show before.
Got that little Z ball, right?
Got the little ball with the ball bearings. And this had a jump in it.
Oh,
which was the bane of my existence. I could not clear it the whole race.
And you're Mr. Dexterity Game.
I know. I started off in first. I was doing all right and then just got stuck right there. I didn't make that jump the whole rest of the game.
You need to stick to tumbling dice.
I do. I need to get tumbling dice.
You do. That needs to be in your collection, yeah, man.
Definitely.
All right. What else
do you got?
Oh, okay. Well, I played some games too. All right. So played some games over New Year's Eve and went to a party with some friends from my church. And it's whenever you go to a party with people that you don't really know that well or that aren't really gamers, you know, it's like I always kind of load up a bag. And I take games with me, but I don't advertise that I've brought games unless the conversation turns towards that. Because, you know, you don't want to show up at someone else's house where they've got a party plan and say, "I'm bringing games, I'm taking over the party," you know.
Right.
But if a lull happens in the party and people, you know, seem amenable to it, then it's fun to bring out games. So, of course, I picked some light party games. I think in my bag I had Word on the Street, Dixit, I think I brought Bonanza, Time's Up Title Recall, and Say Anything. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up playing Time's Up Title Recall and Say Anything. And we enjoyed both of those games. They both ended up as three couples. So by the time most of the crew with kids cleared out, and our kids were upstairs playing with their kids, three couples. And I had a great time with Time's Up Title Recall. That game has never really failed. Mm-hmm. Although I think this time I did experience not quite the afterglow that I normally get from that game. And I think it's because there were some folks in the game that they just didn't really enjoy charade style games.
Yeah.
And so the people that do, they're good at those kind of things. They're going to get more of the cards. And after a while, I think if you're not good at charades or not good at coming up with a word or whatever, it just can be a little bit of a slog and frustrating. You know, you see those people starting to kind of look at their watch like, "Can we just get through this?" And so that sort of happened this time, which was kind of rare, but still a pretty good time.
Yeah, I introduced Time's Up to two separate groups over the winter break.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed this trend with new players and Time's Up. There's always seemed to be one person or one couple that when you're explaining the rules, usually a non-gamer, and not that this is bad or anything, but they're always kind of like, "Oh, I don't know if I'm gonna get the," you know, they look uncomfortable, almost scared. You know,
"I'm not good at this kind of game."
Yeah, I don't know. And then they're like, "We can only say one word. Oh, how are we gonna do?" And then, you know, by the third or second or third pass, you know, they're getting into it and they're really liking it. So I'm seeing that an awful lot.
Yeah. And we played, I guess to kind of follow up that, we played Say Anything, which is even lighter, I guess, as far as,
you know, I'd say so.
It's you know, just a lot more about just writing stuff down that's funny and just laughing about stuff. So that went over real well. I hadn't played that game in quite a while. On a side note about Say Anything, this is kind of a side note. I have a you know, quite a few friends on Facebook, and I interact on Facebook quite a bit and comment on people's statuses and all. You know, I'm sure you guys probably do too. So I have a friend who lives in Tennessee, and she had written on her Facebook wall that what did she say? She lives in Tennessee and it was snowing. And she said, I would cross this Tennessee tundra right now for a copy of Say Anything. And so I immediately said, oh, interesting. And so I was thinking, well, you know, I could send her a copy of Say Anything. Or I've got connections in the game business. I can probably get her a copy. And so I started to write this reply. And I'm like, oh, you know, I can get, you know, someone to send that to you. Just send me your address. I'll send you a copy. And then I realized, oh, she's not a gamer. She meant the movie.
Nerd.
So, yeah. So I saved myself a lot of embarrassment there by not posting that. And I just posted like, oh, you're having an 80s flashback, I see. Yeah, anyway, she was talking about the movie. So so yeah, Say Anything and time's up for the New Year's party. Back to you. What else did you play?
I think I'm going to wrap it up. I played quite a bit of Pyramid games. Your favorite game system, the Ice House, the Looney Pyramids.
They're okay. They're okay.
Fantastic.
They're okay.
Played a lot of Volcano. Taught a lot of my in-laws how to play that. And I also tried the new Volcano game, Pharaoh.
Oh, yeah. No, we played that, didn't we? Did I play that with you?
Yeah. Did we talk about that last episode?
I don't think we did, actually.
Okay.
If we did, fast forward for the next 30 seconds as we talk about it.
Yeah. Pharaoh is a new game that Andy Looney's put out that uses the... you know, the pyramids, and it's very much kind of it's an abstract strategy game, but it's based on King of the Hill, and since you're using pyramids.
No, I felt completely like I was a pharaoh in Egypt.
Shut up. Okay. But he's released the rules on Looney Labs, actually has a new fan site. Oh. If you go to looneylabs.ning.com, you can sign up and you can get all the latest info from them. Nice little thing they've got going over there. But yeah, he released the rules there and as part of their kind of holiday newsletter, they released it. And it was fun. I found with three or four, it's pretty good. With two, it's pretty much who can roll higher numbers first. It's not very fun.
Ooh.
But Volcano is still a top of the heap for me.
That is a good. It's a well-designed game.
I really like that. Yeah. But yeah.
And you know, speaking of Looney Labs, they actually have a new game, new version of Flux that just came out. Mm-hmm. We're actually going to be coming out, I think, next month.
Yep.
Called Pirate Flux. Okay. So if you're a pirate fan, you should check that one out. We were nice enough, it was nice enough to get a review copy of that. So, yeah, we might play it this evening.
I think so.
We'll, on the next episode, we'll give you a little mini review of Pirate Flux. I'm sure it'll be the same Fluxy fun that it always is.
Now, I hear this one's a little different because it has they finally introduced an interrupt type of system, the surprise cards.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can jump in. So that might change it enough for me to... I don't know. I mean, if you hate Flux, you're going to hate Flux. You know, yeah. I don't think this is going to...
I think some people make a career out of hating Flux. I mean, it's like...
I don't get it.
You know? I don't get it either. Yeah. It's like people making a career out of hating Munchkin. I mean, it's just... To me, that just irritates me. I'll just say, because, you know, there's something good about Munchkin. There's something good about Flux. You know, you don't have to like the game, but every time that a version of that comes out, you know... People don't need to be rolling their eyes and just saying, oh, it's another version. You know, it's like, whatever.
Yeah. Now, I tend not to like, you know, most games of the Euro persuasion. But man, the hatred that some people spit out about Flux, I just don't get it.
I don't get it.
And you mentioned Munchkin. There's one more game I want to bring up. I played Revolution by Steve Jackson Games.
Uh-huh.
My buddy Greg, he got it as a Christmas gift from... I want to say a sister-in-law, someone who doesn't really know anything about games, just saw it and picked it up and got it for him. And it is
that's pretty good, because most of the time, like a non-gaming relative, if they say, oh, this person likes games, it usually doesn't go well.
Yeah.
That's good.
It was a really good game.
Huh. Yeah, auction game, right? I think
it mixes bidding and area control.
Oh, okay.
And it's surprisingly deep, but yet pretty easy to pick up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of give Steve Jackson a lot of crap, but I mean, it's not designed by him, but his company put it out, and it's a phenomenal game.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think it retails for, I want to say $40, 40 or 50, but there's a lot of good stuff going for that.
It's got some solid strategy from Steve Jackson. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And Greg, he really liked it. And he was even saying this is probably the best you know, area control type game he's played. So there's a lot going on there. You get the bidding action, and then, you know, I really like those hybrid games where it takes kind of two disparate mechanics and throws them together. So Revolution, worth trying out if you haven't, if you have an access to it.
Do
it.
Very cool. Well, I have just a few more things that I've been playing. Actually, the Realm of Miniatures games. We're actually going to be playing War Machine this weekend. But I had been working on my Vigilant Warjack. I haven't done any painting in a pretty long time, and it shows because it's taken me a long time to get through this guy. But he's looking pretty good. I'm going with the photo negative,
excellent
color scheme, it's which a good is look. You know, it's protector of Menoth, but I'm doing primarily a dark red with the white highlights, so that's going pretty well. That actually is what makes it take a little longer to paint, just because of all the red. But one other thing that I did in the last few weeks that is pretty exciting and got some more information to give to you about what I'm about to talk about, and that's I had a new friend contact me on BoardGameGeek who was looking for local gamers in the area to start up a game group. Now, one thing I think I'd mentioned on the show before is that I don't currently have like a regular board gaming group. You know, fortunately, Cody and I are good friends and we both like board games and we can usually pull in a couple other people and create something, but there's no regular thing I'm going to at a game store or at a, you know, at someone's house or whatever that is for board games. And so, BoardGameGeek user and Avon, Indiana resident Sean Johnson contacted me and said, you know, hey, I, you know, saw that you live nearby. He lives literally like 10 minutes from me. You know, would you like to get together and talk about this? And so I went over to his house, and he and his lovely wife Abigail, and they we sat down and talked, and we played some games too. So they taught me how to play Race for the Galaxy.
How'd you like it?
I liked it quite a bit, yeah. And, you know, that's one that, as a gamer, I probably should have played years ago when it first came out. But I was a little bit daunted by the whole icon system on the cards. And, you know, the first play, I lost pretty badly to both of them, both seasoned players. But I really did enjoy, you can sort of see how the cards interact with one another over time. And I'd like to give that one a few more plays. We got to talking about this possible game group. And so we actually worked it out that, and this is sort of a call out to local Indianapolis or central Indiana folks.
People who are willing to make the
drive. yeah. That starting on, our first night is going to be Tuesday, February the 1st. And it'll be a Tuesday night thing every other Tuesday night. And we're actually going to be meeting at the Avon United Methodist Church, which is on US 36 in Avon. And Sean is actually a youth pastor at that church, and so he's able to reserve the room, one of the rooms there. And so we're going to be just getting together every 2 weeks and bring, you know, any board games that you want. We're just going to try to get a big pile of people, local people together, and just play board games. So I'd love to see you come out for that anytime you get a chance. So if you want to email us at the GameOnInbox.
That's GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
Yeah, and just let us know if you're able to make it or if you want any more information about this game group. I think that Sean suggested that when he puts it on the church calendar that he called it the Game On Game Night, which thought that was nice. But you know, we're just trying to get Indianapolis gamers together playing board games and getting to know each other. So
yeah, and I'm looking forward to the first session because that's probably the only one in a very long time that I'll be able to.
Yeah, I had an unfortunate schedule conflict with that.
The same weekend that I think John set that up, I had signed up through a Bible study at my church that meets on Tuesday nights for about 36 weeks, pretty much from the middle of February to the end of the year. Wow. With some breaks built in, but mainly about every week. So,
well, maybe we can have a certain, you know, one-off things where we change the date from a Tuesday.
Well,
or something.
I'm hoping it just keeps going.
Oh, well, that'd be great.
And
too.
Then afterwards, you know, because this is, I'm really glad John set this up because you know this is what I had been wanting. You know,
yeah.
Just kind of a semi-regular night where you just, you know, you can always count on that being on the calendar. You bring your games and you just play.
Right. You know? And we figure having a room like that, you know, I think they're going to use one of the fellowship halls or something like that, multi-purpose rooms. So if three people show up, then, you know, hey, we have put one table up and have play some three-player games. If 40 people show up, then we set up a bunch of tables and play a bunch of games. So, you know, we just want to provide that kind of opportunity. So many thanks to Sean for kind of, you know, just getting the ball rolling on definitely. That. And, you know, we definitely want to encourage any local gamers to contact us and to come on out to that starting on February the 1st. So there you go. Do I have anything else? This has been kind of a long segment on games we've been playing.
Well, I think there's two we wanted to mention in detail.
That's true. And those were?
Triumvirate and Haggis. And these are two of a trilogy of games that have been published by Indie Boards and Cards. The other one being The Resistance, which I think we mentioned after our Myriad Games visit.
Right.
But we got a chance to really play Haggis and Triumvirate, and we're going to talk about it.
Let's do it. So as we mentioned in previous episodes, one of our favorite games that we've played in the last year is Teachu.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really cool ladder-style trick-taking game that's played with four players. It's like a partnership game. And so, you know, this has opened up the doors in my mind to a lot of trick-taking games that, you know, that I may have never tried before. You know, most card games are small and relatively inexpensive. And so, you know, they're nice, easy things to pick up that aren't going to kind of break the bank, but you know, get some interesting mechanics, good gameplay. And one that came out this past year from this game company, Indie Boards and Cards, is a little game called Haggis.
Tasty, tasty Haggis.
Mm. Now, do you know anything about Haggis, about what it is, like what Haggis is? I don't know anything about that.
What the food is?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a...
It's a Scottish delicacy of some
yeah,
kind.
Yeah, yeah. Kayla and I have had it before. It's basically a lot of organ meats,
uh-huh.
kind of ground up with either oats or barley, and it's served in... like a sheep's intestine or something like that.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's very kind of exotic.
Yeah.
Rich
it's a
sort of
very Scottish dish. But no, there's a really neat... really,
when I think Scottish, I think organ meats.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's a really nice Scottish pub here in Indianapolis that really serves the authentic stuff. That's
McNiven's. Yeah.
McNiven's, yep. So yeah, I don't know why this is called Haggis or has kind of a Scottish Celtic theme to it, but I'm all about that. You know?
It's about as logical as Teachu being
exactly,
some weirdo
right.
Chinese theme that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So Haggis is a little bit different. It's got the same sort of feel as Teachu in that it's a ladder climbing trick-taking game. But the one interesting twist is that this is a game for 2 to 3 players, and that's, I think, a great thing.
Yeah, that really raised my, like, especially, I'm like, a two-player game like Teachu,
game.
That,
yeah.
I don't know if that would work.
But. Right. But it works really well with mm-hmm. both 2 and 3 players. And so sort of the way the game works here is that you have a deck of cards that has 5 suits. And these are not traditional suits. They look kind of pseudo-Celtic little symbols, you know, mm-hmm. and they're different colors. So usually we'll just kind of go off of the color or the symbol if, you know, always colorblind friendly, you know.
Yep.
And so there's 5 suits, and the cards go from 2 up to 10 in those 5 suits. And then every player is issued 3 wild cards, which is a jack, a queen, and a king. And one interesting thing is that these are double-sided, so they don't go into your hand. They actually sit in front of you on the table. So you get to see when you're playing what wild cards your opponent has access to.
Yet they are still part of your hand.
So the goal in the game is that the goal of each hand is that you're trying to be the first person to get rid of all of your cards. And so that does include those wild cards that are sitting in front of you. So at the beginning of the game, everybody gets dealt out 14 cards. And then any cards that are left over are put into a pile. That pile is called the Haggis.
Mm-hmm.
And in a 3-player game, you play with all 5 suits. In a 2-player game, you remove 1 suit from the game. So the way the math kind of works out is that in a 3-player game, there are 3 cards in the Haggis. In a 2-player game, there are 8 cards in the Haggis. And the Haggis is important because whoever goes out first and gets rid of their cards first, they get the Haggis and any points that might be there. So out of those cards that you get in your hand, 2 through 10 in each of these suits, the only cards that are worth points are the 3, the 5, the 7, and the 9, the odd cards. Each of those is worth 1 point. And then your wild cards that are in front of you, the jack, queen, and king, are worth 2, 3, and 5 points. So if you're going to be kind of accumulating tricks, putting them in your scoring pile, and then at the end of the hand, you'll add up all the points that you have there. So everybody gets their 14 cards, and much like Tichu, you get to make a decision as to whether you're going to bet on whether you're going to be the first person to go out or not. And rather than calling Tichu or having some name for it, they just call it making a little bet or a big bet. And so a little bet is 15 points, big bet is 30 points. And those are the two that you can make. And the way that that gets paid out at the end is that if you've bet 15 points and you're the first person to go out, then you get 15 points. Nice and easy. If you aren't the first person to go out, then the bet that you made, those 15 points, go to the person who did go out. And it also goes to any players who didn't bet at all. So that can be a strategy in a three-player game of, well, even in a two-player game either, two, I guess, is that if you see other people betting, you might want to hold back and not bet because you're guaranteed to get some points. So you'll make that bet based upon the cards that you have, and then whoever's left of the dealer will begin and lead out the first trick. Now, much like Tichu, you get to lead out a particular combination of cards. The combinations are a little bit different from Tichu, but similar. You could lead out a single card. You can lead out a pair of cards, three of a kind, four of a kind, five of a kind. If you use a wild card, six of a kind. And so whatever you lead out, then the next player will have to beat that particular combination, but the same kind of combination. So if Cody plays a pair of threes and it comes to me, I would have to play a pair of something else higher in order to beat him. I couldn't play three of a kind or a single card. I'd have to also play a pair. So you have to follow that. And you basically will continue to go around and kind of trump one another by playing higher and higher combinations until the other cup of all other players pass. And then in a three-player game, if you have two passes in a row, then that other person will get the trick and will take all those cards and put them into their hand. Like I said, you get those three wild cards in front of you. Those can be used at any time and in any combination as wild cards. So if you wanted to throw in two of those as two wild cards in a combination, you can, or in a straight. The other thing that you can play besides sets of cards is you can play runs of cards, like 2, 3, 4, 5 or 2, 3, 4 or whatever. One big difference between this and Tichu is that in Tichu, you can play, it doesn't matter what suit you play. You just play a sequence of cards. In Haggis, they have to be in the same suit.
A straight flush.
Like a straight flush, yeah. So if you play a 2, 3, 4, they all have to be the same suit.
But unlike Tichu, you can start with a three card straight.
Right.
Five card.
You have to be five in a Tichu, but yeah, a three card straight. You can also play consecutive pairs, which is also like Tichu, but the different thing is that they have to be the same suit. So it's like if you play a pair of sevens and a pair of eights, and they're green and red, it has to be green and red. I don't think there's even a red in the deck. If I just said that, that'd be the same suit though. So those are basically what you're able to do. Now the big difference, one of the huge differences in this game from Tichu is that you have bombs. There's bombs in Tichu as well, but the bombs are in front of you because they're played as with those wild cards that are in front of you.
Some of them are.
Yep. So there's and you get a nice reference card with the game that every player gets that'll show you the sequence of bombs. So it's real easy to keep track of. And really, after you play it about two times, you won't even need the reference card anymore.
Now, something to say about actually all of the indie board and card game is the components and the production quality is very good, especially for the price.
Very good.
These are $15, $20 games. And
Boxes are kind of like a, let me say, like a 4x6, 5x7 box, something like that.
Yeah. About the size of an index card.
Yeah, the size of a big index card and about an inch and a half deep. So nice little, they're all the same size for these games that we're going to be talking about. And so they'll fit nicely on a shelf and so forth. Card quality is fantastic. You're kind of the art guy here. What do you think of the artwork in Haggis?
Oh, I really like it. I mean, I'm a Scottophile. I don't know what you'd say. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Scottish stuff anyway. So I kind of like playing this because, I don't really integrate well with the Chinese theme so much. The Scottish Celtic theme, I'm all about. That's a really minor thing, being just a little ladder game, but I want to go down to McNiven's and pull out Haggis and play some games.
Oh, we need to do that.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, let's go to McNiven's.
Stick a card in Haggis.
That'd be great. But yeah, I think they were, for being such a new young company, they really did a good job with the quality. So anyway, back to the rules of the game. You have bombs in this game, and these are sort of trump combinations that are going to trump whatever's being played in the middle. So the sequence of bombs is that the lowest bomb you can play is a 3, 5, 7, and 9 of four different suits. So if you happen to have that in your hand, then you know whatever's being played, if it's pairs of cards and you get up, someone's played a pair of tens, well, nothing's going to beat a pair of tens except for a bomb. And so you could play that 3, 5, 7, 9 down, and that's going to trump that. At that point, then the only thing that's going to beat a bomb is a higher bomb. Mm-hmm. And so then after that 3, 5, 7, 9, the next bomb is using those three wild cards that you have in front of you. And so the first bomb is a jack-queen combination. And then the higher bomb after that is a jack-king, then a queen-king, and then jack-queen-king. And then after that, the absolute highest bomb actually doesn't use those wild cards. It's a 3, 5, 7, and 9, all of the same suit. Nothing beats that. So once you play that, you pretty much, you know.
Yeah. And one other difference in the bombs is that in Tichu, you can and normally would play a bomb out of sequence.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of jump in at the last minute. In this, you play a bomb as part of your turn.
Right.
You know, that's your play. But it still trumps anything that has been in the normal succession of play.
Right.
Unless it's a higher bomb.
Yep. And so in your hand there, you've got your 14 cards and you got those three wild cards. So part of the strategy and the fun of the game is figuring out when are you going to play your bombs or your wild cards, and you're kind of looking at when to hold back and go ahead and pass on a trick or something like that, because you can also see the other wild cards that your opponents have out too. So you know that if you play a jack queen bomb on something and you look at your next opponent and he's got jack queen king still on the table, you know he can beat you because mm-hmm. he's got the higher bomb. The question is, will he choose to do that or not? You know,
and there's scoring questions in bombing too.
I completely forgot that. Thank mm-hmm. you. So yeah, that's the other kind of catch 22 with a bomb is that much like Tichu, a goal in this game is you want to keep the lead, because keeping the lead will allow you to get rid of more cards out of your hand. But if you win a trick with a bomb, all of the cards in that trick go to an opponent. So in a two-player game, they go to your opponent. In a three-player game, the rules actually say that you pick which opponent gets it. I kind of find that that's the one rule that might create a bit of a king-making element. So we just were kind of going casually with the idea of whoever has the lowest number of total points so far in the game, that they would get those cards. Mm-hmm. But you still retain the lead, but all those cards will go to the other player. And it's even worse because of the fact that the wild cards, when you play those as bombs, those are the cards in the deck that are worth the most points.
Yep.
So you play a queen, king, bomb, that's 8 points that you could be potentially giving to an opponent just so that you can keep the lead. So very cool strategy as far as that goes.
Yeah, I can tell a lot, like Tichu, this will have a lot of depth of strategy to it. You know, it's pretty easy to teach and you play a few hands, but I think if you get a lot of seasoned haggis players together that, you know, there's a lot of deep strategic play.
Yeah. So when the round ends, when the first person goes out, then an interesting little scoring step happens in a three-player game. You know, basically, if you are the first person to go out, you're going to look at your opponents and count the number of cards that they still have in their hand. And then the person who goes out first is going to get 5 points for every card that is still in the hand of the opponent with the highest number of cards. So if you have two opponents with 3 and 5 cards, then that player would get 25 points, 5 for each of the cards in that player's hand that has 5 cards. And then the game continues, and the other two players will continue to play until there's only one player left. And at that point, the last player who still has cards will give their cards to the player who went out first. And then that player will get the haggis as well. So going out first, you get a lot of cash and prizes in this game. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get all the cards in your scoring pile. You're going to get any bets that you made. You're going to be getting the cards that were in the last player's hand, and you're going to get the haggis. So that could add up to a whole bunch of points. But if you happen to have done that by using a whole lot of bombs, you might find that you don't have quite as many points as you thought. The person who might be in who went out second or something might have all those wild cards and might end up with a higher score than you. So interesting scoring there at the end. You'll add up all those points and then you'll go again. And usually they said in the game rules that a typical game of haggis would be 250 points. Longer game, you'd play to 350 points. And so that's basically how haggis works. So Cody, give me your thoughts on this game.
I really liked it. You know, we were big fans of Tichu, and like I said, I was skeptical at first of a 2 or 3 player kind of, you know, ladder style game. But I think this really works. I may like it better than Tichu. I kind of wish there was a 4-player element, because, you know, Tichu really works well in that 4-player environment. But this is a really good game, and I really like to get some more plays in. But big fan.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I've got a chance to play this with, as you mentioned in the previous segment, Sean and Abigail, new friends from here in Avon, Indiana, and they really enjoyed it, and it looks like they might be picking up a copy themselves. But it's got that great element of trick-taking and ladder style that Teach You has, but I get Teach You to the table so infrequently because of that. You're locked into four players there. But man, two and three players, I have that available to me almost all the time. Yeah. And so it'd be real easy to, and it's a small box. You can just kind of bring it along, put it in a backpack or a briefcase or something like that. And it's always there for you. So I think it retails for $15.
Yeah, that's a steal at that price.
Yeah.
Just pick it up, definitely.
Yep. So that is Haggis.
All right, now the second game that we want to talk about from Indie Board and Cards is a Roman themed game, more or less. It is
SPQR.
SPQR indeed. It is Triumvirate, which is a two player game that seems pretty simple on the surface, but this one can get really deep and really thinky real fast, I think.
Yes, indeed. And this is a game that the theme is, you know, like you said, Roman. It's sort of based upon this idea of this triumvirate of three generals.
Caesar, Pompey, and Crassus.
Caesar, Pompey, and Crassus. Thank you. You just knew that off the top of your head.
I'm big into the Roman stuff.
Okay. I didn't know that about you. So these three.
It's like some secret.
We just learned something. Anyway.
Spartacus, one of my favorite movies.
I've known you
Kirk
for years.
Douglas, 1960. Go watch it.
Oh, that's right. You did like Spartacus. So this game is about trying to get one of these three gentlemen elected emperor. And so this is actually done through a very interesting two-player trick-taking mechanic. Again, another trick-taking game we're talking about. This time, the game is only for two players. And I should mention, and I forgot to in the last segment, I apologize for that. Haggis was designed by a gentleman named Sean Ross. And this game, Triumvirate, is designed by Travis Worthington. So I want to make sure to give those guys some credit for the great job they do on these games. So in Triumvirate, you're going to be trying to get these folks elected. And the game is played over a series of rounds that is comprised of a series of hands, which is comprised of a series of tricks.
Wheels within wheels.
Wheels within wheels, exactly. And so, you know, the game components themselves is you have a deck of 27 cards, and the, you know, there's three suits, a triumvirate, get it, try, three suits, got it, you get it,
I got it,
okay, three suits, yellow, red, and black. And then you're also going to get with this game a little tiny board which sort of represents your, I guess it's like your Senate board or something like that. It's where you're going to be keeping track of how many votes each one of your generals is getting.
Now I think they got a bulk order on the little little wooden circles because Resistance uses them as well.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, the other component you get in the game is you get a bunch of these little round wooden discs that are in different colors that represent votes and other sort of things. There's one for keeping track of who the dealer is, and also one for keeping track of who's won each round. So you're going to start out the game by dealing 11 cards to each player. Now, there's 27 cards in the deck, so there's going to be 5 cards that are set aside. And then you'll begin to play your hand. And the hand will consist of 3 to 7 tricks, with the idea being that whenever you get 3 tricks, one of a particular color, then the hand ends, and then that results in one vote in favor of that color's general. And so these are 2-card tricks. And you have a series of cards in your hand, and so the non-dealer player is going to lead out a particular card, and then the other player will have to follow suit. So you have to follow suit, and if you play a higher card in that suit, then you will gain control of the lead. If you play a lower card in that suit, then that suit will still win, but then the other player will retain the lead. Again, highest card gets the lead.
Kind of like a fancy version of war.
Okay, yeah.
In some ways.
I see what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, especially with the two-player element there. Right. So
it's better than war.
Yeah. If you can't follow suit, if you don't have any of that card of that suit, then you can play whatever card you want. But one interesting thing that's different from other trick-taking games is that, let's say Cody played a red 5, and I didn't have any red in my hand.
Luke Skywalker.
But I had a yellow 7. I could play that yellow 7, and in a lot of trick-taking games, you just kind of throw that card off, and that'd just be a way to get it out of your hand. But and the lead suit would still win. But in this game, if I play a yellow 7, then the high card wins, even if it's not a the suit that was lead. And so the yellow would actually win that trick, and then I would gain the lead for that. So that's an interesting thing there, is that it's not really like there's a trump suit or a trump card, but you can play back and forth, gaining the lead based upon that. In this game, you don't care so much if you have the lead. You're basically trying to get particular colors to win the council's votes here, to be able to place a token onto the board. I guess I should back up and just say, the purpose of this game is to win. And ultimately what you're trying to do is influence the votes here, which are these tokens that are going onto the board, so that a particular color wins the emperorship of this in this game. And then whatever color wins, you have an opportunity during the middle of the game to pledge cards of whatever color you want. And at the end of the game, whichever color has won, you'll turn over your pledged cards, and whoever has the highest number of cards of that color is the winner. So it becomes this kind of interesting push and pull of, you're trying to get particular colors to win, and you're also taking cards out of the deck, more or less, by pledging them that are that particular color, thereby making it harder for that color to win. So, these tricks are going to continue, these two-card tricks, until three of one color have come out. And once the third of that color has come out, then the hand is over. So let's say that a hand ends and we've gotten three yellow tricks. Well, then a yellow token will go onto the Senate board. And then at that time, at the end of every hand, is the opportunity for players to pledge. So you can take any card, the cards that you have left in your hand, you can choose one of those and play it face down and pledge that card. Now, you can only make three pledges the entire game, so you're not required to pledge after every round. Matter of fact, it's probably not a good idea to pledge after every round, because you'll run out of opportunities to. But you can choose to pledge a card. And so, once you've chosen a pledged card of a particular color, you might want to start then influencing the vote as much as you can, get win tricks of that color, so that senator can get more votes. And I keep saying general senator. I'm probably not using the right terminology here, but the idea is, I think they're generals, right? They're
right.
Trying to, because in the cards themselves, you have cards that go from 0 to 8. Now, the cards that are 1, 2, 4, 6, and 8, those are kind of like senator cards, and they're just used for, trick taking in the middle of the game. Then the cards that are 3, 5, and 7 are called your legion cards, and these are the cards that you can pledge. So you're fully welcome to pledge senator cards. You can pledge any card that you want, but the only cards that are going to be worth any points at the end of the game are going to be the legion cards. And so that's what those cards are. The other card is the zero card, which is called the mob. And the thing that the mob does when you're doing your trick taking is that I mentioned that if you aren't able to follow suit, you can play any card that you want of a particular color, and then that'll win for that suit. If you play the zero card, then that card acts as a trump for any other suit. Again, you can only play it that way if you don't have any cards of that other color. But if you play it as a card in that suit, then it just counts as a zero. So you can sort of use it as a low card for the suit that you want, or in special circumstances, you can actually use it to trump other suits. So you'll play a hand of 3 to 7 tricks. You'll place that voting token down. And then at the end of the hand, after the pledging part finishes, one interesting thing is that the cards that are in your hand are going to stay in your hand. You're actually not going to muck them and throw them back in. You're going to take up all the cards that were used for the tricks, and you're going to take up the 5 cards that weren't dealt out the first time, and you're going to shuffle them up again. And then after you've shuffled them up, you're going to set aside 3 cards and then evenly deal out the cards that are left over. So now you're basically getting dealt out the same cards that were just used for tricks, plus a new element of these 5 cards that were face down to begin with. So plus all the cards that are currently in your hand. So you get this sort of interesting mix of cards here, and it's actually kind of a tricky thing to figure out what's been played, what's been pledged, and you know what might be just hiding underneath those three cards that aren't being played.
Again, kind of like Haggis, surprisingly deep.
Yeah, oh yeah.
One of those easy to teach, hard to master sort of things.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I know that the way I've explained the rules probably makes it sound like a brain burner. It really isn't, once you kind of get the idea down of what you're trying to do. Playing two card tricks, I think, feels awkward at first, but then once you get it down of what you're trying to do and how you're trying to influence particular colors to win, it starts to make a lot more sense. So after you've played through, you could play anywhere between three and seven hands of this, because you have your 3 to 7 tricks in a hand, which will result in one of those voting tokens going down. And then 3 to 7 hands to determine who the winner is as far as the number of voting tokens. Whoever gets to 3 voting tokens, that's the color that wins. At that point, you'll turn over your pledged cards, and whoever has the highest number of pledged cards in that color will win that round. And then there's some round markers where someone will get a token for that. And then you play basically best of 3 rounds to be the total game. The whole game from start to finish, less than half an hour, really, if everybody knows how to play. But it's surprisingly deep. And Cody, I'll go ahead and quit talking and let you talk a little bit here. What did you think of Triumvirate?
Well, like I said earlier, I mean, it's one of those where it's easy to learn, but it really has some deep strategy, and it's nice because you can play a best of 3, even like a best of 5. I mean,
oh yeah,
it's a deep game, but you can play it quickly, and it's really good for 2 players, and it doesn't take up a lot of room. I mean, yeah. You know, I don't know if that's a big thing, but it's another home run, I think, for indie board and cards.
I agree. It's so tricky, the interplay of the cards in this game, where you know, you're trying to influence the tricks to get those colors that you want. But man, then you're pledging card, you pledge that 7, you know, because, I'll get 7 points. But now you've taken that 7 out of the deck. So when the tricks come around again, the cards come around again, you don't have that to be able to try to influence it. So you start pledging cards real early, and all of a sudden there's no way that color is going to win because you've taken all the powerful cards of that suit out of the deck. And so we found that the games that we've played, it's never been just a black, 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 yellow, yellow, yellow. I mean, there's always been some back and forth as far as the colors. And sometimes you actually have to hold back and choose to let a color that you don't care about win, just so you can keep the good cards that you need in your suit in the game.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of bluffing, too. You know, you're trying to misdirect your opponent so you can get in and get the general you want to win.
Right, right. And so it's so indirect because you're not individually trying to keep the lead or get rid of your cards. You know, you're trying to subtly, indirectly influence what's going on. And that's
you want to make it look like you've won by accident.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're not really going full throttle toward it.
Although in my case, I think most of the times I've won, it has more or less been by accident. It's a tricky one. But I really, really enjoyed this one. I actually had this game had been produced before. I don't know if it's by the same company or by a different company in a different version. This is actually the second version of this game that's come out. And I think the Spiel podcast had done a review of it a year or so ago, and was really interested in it at that time. And so this new version, if you had maybe listened to that podcast, or maybe you've never heard of this game before, this is definitely the time to get it, because the component quality is fantastic. It's a low price point. I think this one retails for $20.
I think you're right.
Whereas Haggis retailed for $15. But I think that's because you're getting the cards plus all the little cardboard and wooden bits there. So, but a compact box and just a very deep and fun 2-player game. So that's Triumvirate.
Yeah. And one more thing, you know, we didn't talk about the Resistance this episode, but if you go back and listen to our kind of download from our Myriad Games Extra Life trip, we talk about, that's one of the games we played, and you know, just real quick on that,
go ahead, give it like a little mini overview if you don't mind.
The Resistance is basically it's a werewolf style social game, you know, where there's spies, and then there's members of the Resistance, which are the good guys, and it has a lot of the same interplay as Werewolf. You know, there's lots of blind accusations, and it's mainly a social kind of game. But the thing is, this one is meant for, I believe, 5 to 10. Let me pull it up real quick. Yep, 5 to 10 players. So smaller than, you know, Werewolf. You know, 11 is usually your minimum starting number.
Right.
You know, this and Are You the Traitor kind of tried to fill that niche. And honestly, I love Looney Labs, but I think the Resistance is the game Are You the Traitor should have been.
Yeah.
I mean, it plays you get that werewolf experience, that paranoia experience, but with a lot less people. And it's well themed, and it's at a good price point for $20. So these first three games that they've put out, I mean, they're all very different. I think if you bought all three, you get three very different experiences. But yeah. They're all home runs to me.
And it's rare for a small company like this who's just put out just a few games to have this many that I think are just really good quality and good success. I mean, we've seen game companies that are young that are, you know, maybe they put out one game and it's good. Well, that's great for them, you know. Or but the ones that put out tend to put out a whole lot of games. Mm-hmm. You know, it's quantity and not so much quality there. So hats off to Indie Boards and Cards.
Well done.
Yeah, well done. Yeah,
well
get
done.
Get the game on clap there. But we really enjoyed all of these games. We would highly recommend any or all of these three to be part of your collection. So, hey, before we go on to the Game On Inbox, I had a question for you.
Yes.
Did you get any gaming stuff for Christmas?
You know, as far as gaming stuff, is a pretty lean Christmas. I got Lord of the Rings, The Confrontation from you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Hooray for the Fantasy Flight holiday sale.
Hey, it's a good game. We played it.
We did. It was a good game.
I thought it was good. I didn't really get any other games. I did get a really nifty chainmail dice bag.
Oh, which is sitting on the table right now.
That's right. It's from, you can look at a good friend of ours, Heidi. Heidi Neff. She lives in a beautiful Austin, Texas.
Go Longhorns.
Whatever. How about them horned frogs, huh?
Sick 'em frogs or whatever. Right.
But anyway, she does a lot of chainmail work, you know, it's like dice bags or keychains, stuff like that. You can check her out. It's the Chainmail Winch, but it's spelled chain and then M-A-I-L-L-E.
Yeah.
But just Google that. She does a lot of good work, and I've got this really cool silver and gold dice bag. And included, I got I also got for Christmas the new D20 from ThinkGeek.
Oh, yeah.
That when you roll a 20, it lights up and it's red. And it's like, uh-huh. I mean, it doesn't make noise, but it flashes red. And, you know, it's really kind of cool. It's about the size of a golf ball. It's a big old thing. But
cool.
But that's the only gaming. What about you? Did you get any gaming stuff?
You know, Cody gave me the Avatar of Menoth Warjack from War Machine. Thank you very much.
Which will be crushing my forces here when it's done.
Yes. So that one's just the big behemoth Warjack for
it's got Menoth, it's got so. Like church pipe organ pipes as its steam stacks,
and
which
a
I
huge
think
so. Sword.
Yeah, and it's got like a stained glass shield.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's gonna be interesting to paint to see how that works out. But that was pretty much it. I got like a little party game and the Secret Santa thing we did at work. Mm-hmm. And so that it was kind of like a mass market party game there. But that was it. Now, that's really interesting that you know, you and I are like, we're big time gamers. We're gaming podcasters. What has happened where we're not getting any game stuff for Christmas?
I don't know.
So I guess we've got too much. We have too much abundance of games in our life.
I don't know. I was just thinking that my game collection is right now pretty Jones Theory compliant. There's not, you know, I feel like
nice and trim. Yeah.
There's nothing out there I really want or have to have, you know, own wise. And yeah. I'm pretty set right now. So
I am actually beginning of the year here. I know I say it all the time, but I actually am going to do it because I really am in need of a little bit of cash flow right now. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, for the family and for some other expenses. So I'm going to be selling a large chunk of my games off that are not Jones Theory compliant or that have failed the Richard postulate of not getting played in a year. But I think that I'm. What do you think? And I'll ask this to the listeners too. You know, what do you think would be the best way to sell my games? I'm inclined to go eBay,
mm-hmm.
But I know that a popular way to sell games recently has been to use geek list auctions on BoardGameGeek.
Yeah.
And so I've done that before too, and I've had mildly good results with that. But I know that depending on the game, eBay might fetch a bigger price, or I could also use the BoardGameGeek Marketplace, which I think is the most user unfriendly site
yeah.
ever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What do you think would be the best way? I probably want to sell 30 or 40 games here.
So. Yeah, I think your best bet is going to be first, you know, either through this new gaming group that we're trying to organize or just through the gamers we know locally. You want to maximize what you're getting out of it by eliminating shipping costs.
So, good point.
If you can meet up people locally and, you know, just you have your list and you say, okay, guys, I'm going to give you first crack.
Uh-huh.
You know, I know someone here that you know, six or so months ago, sold off a bunch of games and pretty much had his list and gave it to his friends and say, hey, if you have anyone that might be interested, you know, send it along. And, you know, he got through a lot of his games that way.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
So, you know, that might be something to do. And then anything that's left over, I think you could be choosier on how you sell it.
Yeah, because, I mean, things like...
I think you'll spend half your profits on shipping, honestly.
Well, if I use eBay, then I can actually build that into the cost. You know, I can say that whatever the auction is, or I make it a buy it now or something like that. And then you can actually set and say, you know, you can have them calculate shipping based upon their zip code, or you can just have a flat rate or something like that. So,
but do you still want to box up all those things separately? Let's be lazy, John.
No, I'm willing to put in the time because I think the time that it'll take to box things up and get it over to the post office, you know, with it's time to liquidate some things. You know, I've got a lot of games in my collection that don't get played, so gotta.
I still say do the local thing first. I think you'll be surprised what you get.
That's a good idea. Okay, well, enough of that. Let's move on to the game on Inbox.
Okay, we have a few emails here during our little winter hibernation here.
Yeah, thanks for writing as always.
And the first one is from Randolph Carter, and he writes, "Hey, Cody and John, I just want to let you guys know that I'm really enjoying your podcast." Thanks, Randy.
Yeah, thanks.
I listen to quite a few gaming-related podcasts while I work, and yours has quickly become one of my favorites. It's nice to find a podcast that consistently delivers quality listening material.
It is nice to find that. Let us know when you do.
I'm relatively new to the board game hobby, but I've learned quite a bit from listening to you both. Thank you for the education. Oh, wow. At any rate, I hope you guys enjoy putting these shows together as much as I do listening to them. I'm very much looking forward to more. Take care, Randolph Carter.
Well, that's a good one to start with.
Yeah. And you know, that is people like that. I'm not trying to toot our own horn here, but, you know, those new gamers that don't necessarily know everything that's on BoardGameGeek. You know, we like to think that we have a pretty wide net and we get kind of the people new to the hobby and the seasoned veterans, too. But it's really nice when we have those people new to the hobby that have a ground floor to get in on.
Yeah, so. I forget about that sometimes, you know, because we're so ingrained in the hobby now. Yeah. We know so much about it that, you know, that there's folks coming in that have never heard of games before. Actually, you know, one of the friends that I played games with at New Year's, he just sent me an email last week saying that he didn't even know that I had a podcast, and he has a job where he drives a whole lot, and so he. Said he downloaded and listened to like 10 episodes of show, and he said, "Oh, I just love it." And he had suggested, "Hey, you know, have you ever heard of Axis and Allies?" And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I have." And I said, I had to confess, I'm like, I've never actually played Axis and Allies, even though I know it's a classic. And he said, "Oh, we should get together and play it." And I said, "Yeah, that sounds good. Let's do it." And he wrote back and said, "You know, after listening to your podcast, I had no idea that there were such good quality games out there. And after listening to you, maybe you could suggest something and we'll do something else other than Axis and Allies. You probably have something more fun." But you know, Nathan, if you're listening, I'm totally into playing Axis and Allies too. That'd be fine.
Yeah, you know, it's neat. I always love seeing those threads on BoardGameGeek. And there's usually about one a week of, you know, someone who's like just discovered the hobby. You know, they're the person who's had like Ticket to Ride introduced to them. And then they kind of do a little Googling, a little searching. And then their eyes are open and they're like, "Oh my gosh, look at all this stuff."
Yeah. And you get the people that are... you know, very warm and welcoming, and then you know, then you get those that are just like the new prison inmates came in and it's like, "Oh, fresh, you know?
Yeah, that's BoardGameGeek.
That's true. Yeah, that's
because what... I mean, I remember I was only like 14 at the time, but you know, after I played Talisman, I'm like, I had no idea there were board games like this.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a good thing.
Yeah.
All right, so Randall, thank you so much for that.
Thanks, Randall.
Our next email is from Josh Taylor, and he writes, "Hey guys. I've been listening to the podcast for a few months. One of you left a business card with my wife, who was a receptionist for a chiropractor about a year and a half ago."
I'm guessing that's you.
That would be me. So, and I remember, is your wife's name Kristen? I think so. I happened to get in a conversation with her about my podcast, and she said that you would... or a gamer yourself and went to Gen Con. So very cool. He says, apparently she mentioned something about me. Oh yeah, just what I said. Apparently she mentioned something about me being at Gen Con and you said I might enjoy your show. I definitely shoved it in a pocket and didn't come across it again until Gen Con this past time when I wore the jacket again. And for that, I've been glad. You guys are fun to listen to and it's great having fellow indie guys doing something like this. So, hey Josh, if you're listening to this, you know, we mentioned the game night there. I mean, the chiropractor office where your wife works is like literally like 5 minutes away from where this church is.
So, oh, well, there you go.
So that, you know, I'm not sure where you guys live, but let's see. That said, I think another good this was going back into December here. He was talking about our holiday game guide. Mm-hmm. He says, "I think another good stocking stuffer game is Pit. An old game to be sure, but fun and crazy for the Gateway family. While I try to avoid games where shouting and frenzy are almost required, I did enjoy it quite a bit. I've never played that game, but I know it, yeah, like it comes with a bell and there's like lots of shouting and stuff.
Yeah, so. We played Pit at one of my old jobs. I had started like a game lunch sort of a thing, you know, where we play games at lunch. And someone brought in Pit one time. And yeah, it's just kind of this yelling trading game. And there's a bell. And when you established your thing, you ring it and you yell corner on the market because it's about like getting goods and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a fun one. I mean, it's a good for families to get into because there's a lot of passing cards and shouting.
There's families that yell a lot. Anyway,
yeah, right? And there's a big bell. So, yeah.
Yeah. And he goes on to say, also, do you have any recommendations for Gen Con events for a D&D newbie who knows enough to get the game but not the rules well enough to really play? I've wanted to get into an event the last couple of years but felt too experienced to do the beginner event but not enough for any other. He says, thanks again for a great podcast.
Ooh. I'm going to assume he means D&D 4th edition, the current edition. Uh-huh. I don't really do a lot with 4E these days, but what I'd say is if you feel that you're past the beginner event, if you go on wizards.com/DND, the letter N, you can find all of the rules for how to create an RPGA character, because I think you could create one there. You know, you have the materials there, and I think you can grok it enough to get a level one character together. Most tables are pretty welcoming to a new player. You know, you might want to say when they're marshalling, that means when they're getting the tables together for the slot, that you're a new player. And I think they would try and at least to put you with a little more newbie-friendly group. I mean, you have the old grognards that are really annoying. And
are they called old D&D players grognards?
Some of them do. I mean, they probably don't call 4th edition players. But yeah. Like, you know, as we'll talk about later, actually, I'm kind of getting more and more in that 1E retro gaming movement. And you know, one of my favorite blogs to read is called Grognardia.
Oh, nice.
And it's a guy talking about old, like, even beyond 1st edition D&D, like basic, like old original D&D, you know. I'm like, okay.
I played D&D back in the 60s.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's what I would do. RPGA or local events, you know, a lot of game stores, including Myriad Games.
That's right.
We'll talk about them later.
We haven't mentioned Myriad Games. We will.
We're moving them around.
No, don't worry.
but check with your local store and heck, you're an indie, so
not as much.
I know some stores still run it, and you may also try the D&D encounters. That made me think. A lot of the stores around here run that Wednesday night event, and that's pretty much one encounter a week. So that's a really good way to kind of ease into this thing. You know, you get the combat system down, and you're not committed to a 4-hour slot.
Okay.
So see, I changed my mind right there. If you can, D&D encounters on a Wednesday night, probably your best bet.
But fantastic.
Grognards.
Okay, well, cool. Josh, thanks so much for that email. And again, always good to get in touch with a local indie gamer.
All right.
Moving on. There we got a little paper shuffling.
We're prepared.
Yeah.
We have an email from Helen Hutchins. And this one's been on the back burner a while, so sorry about that, Helen. She says, hi, Cody and John. I was listening to episode 52 and heard the question about the next step for train games. Before the listener in question jumps straight into the really deep train games, I would suggest he try Chicago Express to see if he likes the economic engine, stock manipulation version of train games. Then after that, I would suggest Steam, Railways of the World, Railroad Tycoon, is also a good game for moving up to the next level. Plus, Railways of the World has an expansion for Rails of England and Wales that also uses the economic engine and goods delivery. Just thought I'd put in my two cents. I haven't listened to episode 53 yet. She probably has now. So sorry if this is redundant. Thanks for the great podcast, Helen Hutchins.
All right. Helen, thanks for the email. And you know, that's actually Chicago Express was mentioned by several of our listeners as a next step game in the train game. For those who hadn't heard the previous episode, there was a listener who had written in saying that they played Ticket to Ride and they were kind of looking for that next step, but they didn't want to play something as complicated as Age of Steam or anything like that. So what would be a good, you know, kind of bridging game there?
You know, since you mentioned Ticket to Ride.
Okay. I know what you're going to say.
I put this on the Twitter account.
Go ahead.
I love Days of Wonder. They've probably moved into that number one slot. They have overtaken Fantasy Flight.
That's amazing, but yeah.
Probably at the top of my list.
No, they very well deserved. They're right. a great company.
But what the heck? They've got this new expansion for Ticket to Ride, Alvin and Dexter.
Alvin and the Chipmunks and Dexter.
Yeah, right? And it's basically a giant Godzilla-like monster and a giant, like, you know, robot War of the World sort of thing
yeah.
that you add to Ticket to Ride, and they terrorize cities cities and they change game. What is that? I mean, that is about the dumbest thing I've ever. It'll probably be done very well.
I'm sure the miniatures will be beautiful.
Yeah, and you know, even the rules will probably be done very well. But I mean, does Alan R. Moon need another car or something? I mean, that is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Take a game like Ticket to Ride and add a damn monster in there.
Okay, now I agree.
Oh my gosh.
What about a Cylon expansion? What if the Cylons were terrorizing the train tracks?
Don't even get me started on the new BSG expansion. Oh, yeah. They've muddied that game so much, I don't even want to play.
Yeah.
But Alvin and I thought it was a joke. Yeah, I was on their website looking for something else.
I'm looking for April 1st somewhere.
I was like, oh, Alvin and Dexter, what's up? I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So what the hell, Ticket to Ride?
We'll probably get it. Oh, maybe not.
I don't know. I gotta try it, but that's about the dumbest thing I've heard in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could have. I guess the idea of it is that these things are moving around. They start off in certain places on the board, and whatever city they're in, you can't end a route there or start a route there or something like that. And then there's going to be other cards and mechanics that you can discard a locomotive card to move the monster around. So it's just it adds more player interaction and more screw your neighbor. Than just blocking in the game.
Completely unnecessary and pretty stupid.
I don't disagree with you. I agree, yeah. So, anyway.
Nice job, Alan.
So, our answer to what's the next step in train games is not add a couple of cheesy plastic monsters to the train game that you already have.
you know what Shadows Over Camelot needs? Robots. You know? That's what they need.
That sounds pretty good. When's that expansion coming out?
The Fantasy Flight's putting it out.
But, Helen, thanks so much for those suggestions. And, we haven't talked about this really yet, but I think a train game episode might be kind of fun.
I do too. I mean, I've talked about playing Empire Builder way back when, one of the Crayon Rails games, and my in-laws picked up Steam at Gen Con.
Oh, cool.
And they said very good things about it, and I'd really like to try that. So I think maybe after the War Games episode, because we've got the War Game Grognards that are like, come on,
do the War Games. Yeah. Yeah. So the train games would be good. Mm-hmm. And the Chicago Express would definitely be on that list when we do that.
I took a lot of trains to Chicago. So,
and if I remember the name right, I think that you and your friend Hannah may have played a game of Finca with us at Origins a couple years ago.
Oh,
do you remember that?
I remember that.
I think that's the same Helen.
I was bad at Finca.
I was pretty bad at it, too.
Fruit gathering, not a strong scene for me.
So anyway, hopefully my memory's good there. But
she's probably not listening to the show. Like,
probably not.
I didn't read my email. Jerks.
Like 4 episodes ago. All right, so let's do one last email here. And this is from Chris Van Hoyland from Belgium.
Ooh,
exciting. Listener in Belgium. I love Belgium. Hi, Cody and John. I've recently been contemplating trying out some RPGing with my girlfriend and some friends, and have been mainly interested in the Pathfinder system based on Cody's recommendations.
Ooh, well done, Cody.
D&D 4th edition is something else I looked into, but have heard many bad things about it being too simplified and too much like a board game nowadays. Now, none of us have ever role-played before. Interesting. However, we're all avid Descent players, which is why I think my friends would enjoy trying an RPG. I myself am quite familiar with the Forgotten Realms setting through novels and computer RPGs, and have a basic idea of how the mechanics work. I have some old Forgotten Realm campaign setting books lying around, and I understand Pathfinder is somewhat compatible with them. What would I need to get to start up a basic session of Pathfinder? Besides the core rulebook, I have so far looked into the Crypt of the Everflame adventure, which, as stated somewhere in the RPG Geek forums, is a good adventure to start with. What else would you recommend getting? Ideally, I would like to include some form of map, although I understand the aforementioned adventure comes with a map included, perhaps. Maybe some basic miniatures would not be a bad idea either, to ease my friends into an RPG coming from a component-heavy board game like Descent. Any and all recommendations you guys can give me are very much appreciated. Regards, Chris in Belgium. So, Cody,
what recommendations do you have, John?
The GM Academy is open for business again, sure. So why don't you give them some suggestions?
Well, I know, first of all, that Pathfinder is planning kind of a basic set. A lot like 4th edition has...
Red box.
You know, 4th edition has the red box now, and... You know, that's where they kind of have Pathfinder beat a little bit, is getting the new people in. I don't know when that's coming out. It'll probably be sometime this year, but that would be probably too long for what?
The light green box, is that what they're going to call it?
The fuchsia box. Yeah. However, Crypt of the Everflame is a very good starting module for Pathfinder. I think you'll find your group will take to that, especially if they're Descent players. I think they'll pick up Pathfinder pretty easily. The Forgotten Realms books you mentioned, I'm going to assume they're the third edition, the 3.0 from D&D. It's kind of a whitish gray cover, got a big circle thing on the front. Yes, that will be compatible. You'll have to do some kind of finagling, but if you go on the Pathfinder website, if you go to paizo.com, P-A-I-Z-O.com, they have a free conversion document that will allow you to convert any OGL kind of 3.0, 3.5 stuff into Pathfinder. It's really very easy. And once you've done it a few times, it'll be pretty quick. As far as maps, I believe Crypt of the Everflame does come with a map. You can also get, and I would highly recommend this, Paizo puts out these things called flip mats, which I own a few, and they're great. Some of them are themed, like a forest one or a ship one. They do sell just a plain one, which is kind of like white on one side and yellowish on the other. You can pick that up, and it's great because it's you can use wet erase markers on it, dry erase, even permanent markers on it, and they all come off with really good results. I think that's like $10. Pick that up. And as far as miniatures, I would start. You could even use Descent minis to start. And then after that, I think you can cherry pick from there. There's not a really good mini starting set so much to get.
Especially not in, also because Wizards of the Coast just announced just this past week that they're actually not going to be making their miniatures line at all anymore.
Yeah.
Like they've completely cut that. So. Mm-hmm.
So something else you might, if your group would go for it, is if you go on sites like RPGnow.com or DriveThruRPG, a lot of companies make cardboard heroes, they're called, or things like that, and they're basically just paper stand-ups. You pay a couple bucks and you can print off as many as you need, and you can get them for heroes and monsters, and that works well. You're not spending a lot of money and you can get a lot of mileage out of that. And then this may be the next step, but our friends at Tom Tullis at Fat Dragon Games,
love the Fat Dragon,
makes really good 3D components that you can print out, and they're easy to assemble, and you can make 3D level stuff, not very expensive at all, and it looks great. I've used it in my games. So that would be my base suggestions. If you have any other questions, or once you get to that next step, if you need to know where to go, again, email us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And that about wraps it up, I think.
Oh, wait, I got one more.
Okay.
I got one more thing. This is hot off the presses. Just came
technology.
That's right. This is from Kenny Owens. He says, "Hey guys, first of all, let me take a moment to say sorry for your sudden loss. I know that you're not used to your Colts losing in the first round." Actually, up until recently, we really are used to them losing the first round.
Yeah.
Thankfully, my Seahawks, or my, he says my Hawks, with their stellar 7-9 record going into the playoffs, managed a huge upset over the Saints. Yes, I watched the game. It was very cool.
Yeah, I've got my Seahawks jersey.
Yeah?
Yeah, when I worked at Reebok, I got one of the 12th man jerseys because I love the color.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just uniform on.
That was a cool game. That's who I'm rooting for now, because I figured if the Colts can't win.
They're playing the Bears next, and all my in-law, the Chicago Bears. I don't know.
Oh, that's tough.
I don't care who
wins. Even more reason for you to be a Seahawks fan, right?
They support the Colts. I gotta support the Bears.
Good point. Okay.
Go Bears.
Anyway, I'm getting ready to make some more game purchases, and I'm trying to get not get too many games that are similar in style or mechanics, even though I feel the constant need to get them all.
The gospel spreads.
You got another believer in the Jones theory here. Okay. And he says, "So I put a few head-to-head matchups here and would love to know which you would pick if you had to choose one or the other. I always appreciate both of your points of view." All right, so that's fine. So we'll go through these, and we'll kind of go rapid fire here. And if keep in mind that these are just our opinions. You gotta make your own decision about how you feel about the games in your collection. The Jones theory is a personal theory,
but a universal one,
but a universal truth. Right?
It brings everyone together.
Really. Okay, so here we go. Number one, long shot versus winner's circle.
I've not played Winner's Circle.
We've never played Winner's Circle, so we're going to say long shot.
And I've heard it's better, so long shot.
Okay, so yeah, no real opinion there on Winner's Circle. All right, number two, Alien Frontiers, assuming it's available, versus Kingsburg.
Be patient, wait for Alien Frontiers.
I would also go with Every Alien Frontiers in this case, yes.
And I don't know if we've mentioned this as part of a news issue.
I don't think we have.
There's a reprint coming around March and April.
Ooh.
So if you go to clevermojogames.com, mm-hmm. You can go ahead and pre-order the second edition. And if you have the first edition, you can just buy the new promo card and the little scoring rockets for like $6-7.
Scoring rockets, you say?
Yeah, there's little scorekeepers you put on the track instead of putting one of your Skittles.
Oh, okay.
Put a little toy rocket.
cute.
Yeah.
All right, so cool. So Alien Frontiers.
Oh, yeah. God, Alien Frontiers.
All right, number three. I have the base game of Dominion, so Seaside versus Prosperity.
Seaside. Seaside. Seaside, Seaside.
I got to go Seaside, too, but just barely. I just like the Seaside cards. That's personally just, you know. But
I think Prosperity is too big of a jump from regular. If that's going to be your second expansion.
Oh, yeah. If all you have is Dominion, I'd get Seaside. Yeah.
I would do, heck, I'd get Intrigue. But
yeah, Prosperity is just, that's mm-hmm. that changes
it's, the game it's a good set. Prosperity is a good set, yeah. But it needs to be the fourth or fifth thing you buy.
Number four in the final matchup here, Innovation versus Seven Wonders.
Innovation.
All right. Well, so we heard Cody's opinion on Seven Wonders. So I don't know. I don't think they're similar enough. I think you can have them both in your collection. Now, if you're looking for one to buy over the other, then you're probably Innovation, because that's probably easier to find at this point than Seven Wonders, which is sold out of its print run.
But, no, but I agree with you on the Jones theory part. I think they're two separate.
Yeah. They're civilization building games, but the mechanics are so different that you could, based on mechanics alone, you could divide them up.
Take the art direction from Seven Wonders, put it with
that'd be cool.
I want Asmodee Games to contact me and be like, we want you to design the second edition of.
You hear that, Asmodee Games? I'm telling you, man. Putting a shingle out for graphic design.
I will make that look pretty, because it looks like trash right now. But it's such a good game.
So, Kenny, those are our not very informed opinions about those games.
Perfectly informed.
Yeah, okay, but that's what we would say.
No one should buy Kingsburg instead of Alien Frontiers. No one. Really? No one.
Ooh, that's a bold statement.
It's out there. Okay. Alien Frontiers trumps it on every single level.
Okay, all right, cool. Well, all right, you put your fist down. That's right. Beat your shoe on the table next. Mm-hmm. All right. So, well, I think that wraps up the Game On Inbox. We always would invite you to please write us. Like I said, we had a little bit of a lull in our recording just from the holidays, so we had a little pileup of email there. But we'd love to get emails from you and to interact with you. So if you want to write us and tell us how cool we are, how much we suck, or whatever, please write us at
GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
That's right. You can also call us. And as we said before, that if you we don't get that many voicemails. So if you call us, we'll probably put it on the show.
A lot of shy folks out there.
Yeah. And so you can always call us at 24 hours a day. We've got a nice Google voice number where you can leave us a message and we'll play it. And
we have an operator, Flo.
That's right. And what's the number?
4138-GAME-ON.
That's right. 413-842-6366. 4138-GAME-ON for all your Game On hotline needs. So let's move on.
All right, before we get into our discussion on our New Year's gaming resolution, as has become somewhat of a tradition around here,
yes.
Now we will give
traditional show that we are
to our good friends at Myriad Games.
Dan the man
at Myriad Games, two locations in the greater New Hampshire area.
And it's greater than most places, really.
Is it? No sales tax. That's, you know, right. Live free or die, certainly.
You got Salem, New Hampshire, and kind of in the southern part of the state. You got Manchester up north. Two great locations for Myriad Games for all your gaming needs.
Yeah, and what do they got going on right now, Jeff?
Okay, well, I want to tell a story real quick first.
Oh,
okay?
I love stories.
Yep, because, I mean, one of the things about having a retail store be our sponsor for our show is that there's a lot of other podcasts that have online online discounted sort of places, you know, and so we shop at online places occasionally, you know.
I don't.
Well, you used to. No, you never did, did you? Yeah. No, okay. I did.
Look at me. I'm the good guy.
Shoot. But no, there's nothing wrong with shopping in an online store. But
unless you hate people.
I just want to highlight some of the benefits that we've gotten from having this relationship with Myriad Games and having this retailer on your side. You've got a friend in the gaming business. So, you know, games like that we just talked about, Triumvirate and Haggis. Haggis especially has been a really kind of a highly sought after one. The Resistance is another one that has been kind of selling out really quickly. And, you know, I just picked up a copy of Seven Wonders, and that's a game that's now, as near as I can tell from doing internet research, sold out of its first print run. You know, so games like that, you know, you might be scurrying around on Thoughthammer or on Fun Again, all great sites and everything, but, you know, you're trying to enter in your code, you know, and search for the game, and then you find out, oh, crud, I didn't get there in time, and now it's sold out, you know. You know, when Seven Wonders, when I got back from BGGCon, I just sent Dan an email saying, hey, I just got back from BGGCon and I played this great game, Seven Wonders. And we traded emails. Oh, what was it like? You know, and I'm telling him about the game. And I was like, you know, when that comes in, I'd really love to get a copy of it. And he just said, no problem. We'll get one reserved for you. And so that was it. All the stress was gone. I didn't have to worry about, you know, trying to log on to a site at the right time or watch Board Game Geek to find out, oh, there's two copies of Boards and Bits. Go get it right now. You know, I just had Dan reserve it for me. And all of a sudden, within a few weeks, it was sitting on my door. So, I mean, that is one of the real benefits, I think, to developing a relationship with a retail store. And if you don't have a great one, a friendly professional game store near you, then Myriad Games, I think, would be a good one to go with remotely.
Yeah. So. And you know, I get a lot of people ask me, it's like, you know, why do you pay, you know, MSRP for your games? And yeah, you can get a lot cheaper. I'm like, the service and the MVP program. I mean, yes, the fact that I can set aside X amount of dollars. You know, I spend less on games now than I did before I had it, because it's like, okay, I'm going to spend $50 a month. That's my gaming budget. And yeah, it's part of the MVP program. The perks I get through that, you know, make it even more worthwhile. So definitely check out MyriadGames.com, your friend in the gaming business.
Absolutely.
All right, so even though we're a little late to the party, a new year has dawned. It is 2011, and I keep thinking it's 2010 because on all my date things at work, I put 2010. So
yeah, for me, it used to be checkbook. Like, you know, oh man, the first five checks I've written, you know, I keep putting 2010 on or whatever. But I find that now with all this online banking and everything, I write like two checks a month, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I have like one bill that, you know, won't go through that way. But yeah, so
cool story, bro.
Okay. So that's so exciting. Yeah.
So last year, John and I decided to make New Year's resolutions, but New Year's gaming resolutions that were specific to our hobby and the thing we love so much. So I think you still you remember what we did last year. I've kind of forgotten. We'll see if I was successful.
Well, and you can listen back to our episode. I can't remember the number, but it's called Resolutions was the name of the show. And you can listen back to what our gaming resolutions were for 2010. And one of the main things that we both sort of talked about is the idea of we wanted to make purchasing a game a bigger deal. That we didn't want it to be so much of just this acquisition of stuff and just grabbing the new thing and always just be, you know, buying, but to be more discerning about what we buy. Now, we didn't have any real great way of quantifying that or to see if we actually kept that resolution or not. But, you know, in your opinion, in your looking back on your 2010, how do you think you did as far as making game purchasing a bigger deal?
I think I did pretty good. You know, I mentioned earlier, I think the collection's in actually a good state where there's not really much I want to pick up board game wise. I've picked up a few I would consider duds, you know, that I picked them up. I'm probably not going to do this again. And, but for the most part, I think I did okay. I mean, you know, I'm a pretty religious follower of the Jones theory, so that helps. But
yeah,
I did all right. How'd you do?
I did okay, I think. I did better than I have.
You did better than you've done.
Than I have in previous years, yeah. And so I am trying to do as much as I can, trying before I buy. The Game Share program through Myriad Games is a great way to do that, you know, and not to throw too many more plugs in Myriad's direction, but hey, it's worth talking about because it's been
great.
He's
smoking a cigar. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but it's a great service to be able to try out games. And I found that of the Game Share games that I've gotten from Myriad, I buy about 75% of them, you know. It's like but that's good because that's 25% of things that I would have usually plunked my money down for and then have it sitting in my collection.
And that adds up. You know?
It does add up, yeah. And so I try to do that a lot more. I really only had a couple of falters in that, you know, impulse buy. You know, Cadwallon City of Thieves at Gen Con this past year, that was really my one big stumble at Gen Con. I've had really bad Gen Cons as far as impulse buys go, but that was my one just, oh, I got to get it because it's cool. There's only three left, you know. And,
Gamma World was mine.
Was it?
It was fun enough to play, but I look at it, I'm like, I'm never going to play this again. Yeah, you know, yeah. I'd rather do something else.
So... but I, you know, going to endeavor in this next year, you know, to try to, you know, sell off some games and get more refined and again, continue to make buying a game a bigger deal.
But all in all, I say that was a success.
Yeah.
That resolution.
I look at my collection this year and say there's more stuff in here that I will very readily pull off the shelf and play rather than stuff that's like, oh, I played that and... oh, I got to find some way of getting rid of that at some point. Yeah. So a mission accomplished there, I think. The other thing we talked about was in the realm of RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of almost two sides of the same coin, and the resolution is that I talked about committing to GMing a game, an RPG of some kind, in 2010, and you talked about wanting to be more of a player and to go for, you didn't set exactly a year, but you said, yeah, maybe for the next year or so, to be a player rather than being a GM. So how did that work out for you this year?
Mostly pretty well. I mean, it probably wasn't a full year because I wrapped up my D&D 4th edition campaign, but I've been playing much more than I've been GMing in this past year. And, you know, so I was successful in that, but I found that I like GMing so much more.
Oh, okay.
Like, I like playing okay, but I have more of a thrill GMing.
Yeah.
So you know, I think in the future I'm going to move to GM more whenever I can, because I really like doing that.
Okay.
So.
Well, and one of the reasons why you got to be a player a little bit more is because I did accomplish the goal of GMing a game and currently GMing a Rogue Trader campaign, just a kind of a mini campaign, I guess. We're going to have our third session in a week or so, I think.
Right.
And that'll probably wrap up this kind of canned adventure that I'm doing to get started. And we didn't get a chance to talk about it in the previous segments, but Rogue Trader, we've been playing that for a few weeks, for a few sessions now, and I think that overall I like it okay. I like the fluff and the world of it. I'm not sure if I think they got the dice system and the rules are a little bit too crunchy for me. I think it's just too complex.
Yeah,
for what I want to do.
Yeah, it's kind of like I almost. I want to take your GMing ability, which is really good out of the gate, and I want to move it to a different system because I'm just kind of like, this system's kind of overly clunky. You know, I'd like to see you GM Hex or GM Firefly or something.
I'm considering it. Yeah. I was actually thinking about maybe doing Serenity because it's still relatively fresh in our minds. I mean, we're not so far removed from that world from the TV show, the movie, but. The Cortex system I think is pretty quick, and it's cinematic, the plot point system, and encourages role playing, that kind of stuff. So we'll see what happens, but I want to continue that in 2011 to either continue this group or start up a new group and just continue GMing, because it has been a lot of fun and it's not as hard as I thought it would be, but I see that I have a lot of room for improvement in certain areas, and so that's a nice goal to work towards. So. That was pretty good. So, I think those were really some of the main things that we talked about was game purchasing and also the RPG element there. We talked a little bit about events that we were going to be going to for 2010, and we, I think we accomplished all the event. I don't think you were able to attend Origins this year,
right?
Where you had originally said that you probably would. So that was a changed plan, but got to do a lot of events this year. We both did Hoosier Con. And I did Origins and BGG Con, and of course the big show of Gen Con. So looking forward, is there anything else you want to say about 2010? Why don't you give me your impressions of 2010 gaming in general? Was it a good year? Was it a bad year? Was it,
I thought it was fine. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to quantify. It's I really feel like, here in the show, we're entering, what, our third year?
We hit 2 years in August, so we're in the kind of middle of our third year.
We're settling into a groove in that, and I'm really feeling more, this makes me sound pompous, but I feel like more of an expert in the hobby.
Oh yeah.
Not saying like, oh, I know everything about games,
You're more informed,
Robert Goulet. But I feel like this is a hobby I really know and that I can help people with, and I don't know, it's one of those where the guy who builds ships in bottles has finished building his ship in a bottle, and he's like, "Hey, I'm pretty good at this." So.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounded kind of weird, but
no, that's good. Yeah. It's good to be a resource. I feel like I'm gotten to that point too, where through the podcast, through just all the events and stuff that we've gone to, and all the reading that I've done of game rules and stuff, I feel like when someone says, "Hey, what are some good games?" I feel like I have an educated answer that I can give. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I had a really good year of gaming. It was probably as event wise, gaming cons and things like that was the busiest year that I've had. Getting to go to all what I consider to be the big three for board gamers, at least, is Origins, Gen Con, and Board Game Geek Con. I'm probably going to dial that down a little bit this year.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, and I think we can sort of pseudo officially say that I think so. We're actually not going to attend Origins this year, and it's not really because we don't have a good time at Origins. We have a great time. We've
Tom Vassell is crying right now.
I know, because I know Tom will probably be there. And but we, you know, we had to sort of pick and choose, you know, for various reasons, financial reasons and time reasons and all that kind of stuff, which events we were going to attend. And so we're going to really keep to the big show of Gen Con, our local big local event.
How could we not?
I mean, well, of course we're going to do that. Right there, yeah, man. And try to, you know, kind of expand what we do there. And we'll be at Hoosier Con, local con here, and. Jury's kind of still out at this point as to whether we'll attend Board Game Geek Con. I would really like to go back to that convention, but we'll keep you posted on that. I would love if Cody could make it down there with me.
Yeah, I'd like to try that one out.
Yeah. So apologies for the lack of attendance at Origins this year. Hope you all have a good time in the summer, and lots of great board gaming to be had in the boardroom there. But we'll be back. Last year wasn't our last time at Origins, so. What else for 2011? What are your gaming resolutions for this coming year? What kind of things do you want to do or not do?
Part of my gag here on the show is that, oh, Cody hates Euro games.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's true. But I'm finding that my palate is becoming a little more balanced lately. Like I said, I'm not liking everything Fantasy Flight puts out. And, you know, that was a pretty good litmus test earlier that I liked all Ameritrash stuff.
Yeah.
I would like to try more Euro stuff and not be so kind of straight up dismissive about it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try and really put forth an effort to try more Euro games. And if I don't like it, I don't like it. But, you know, I've always said that I'll try a game once or twice. And, you know, I really want to make an effort to do more Euro games instead of, you know, John occasionally would force one upon me, but you know, now I want to go out and seek it and really, you know, see if I can find that balance.
Nice. Yeah. I think, you know, I play probably more Euro games than you, or I'm not sure if that's the case. I was going to say I play more Euro games than you, but you and I play games together an awful lot. And so it's not like I have some secret group that I'm playing Euro games with. Yeah. But I kind of want to play more of those style board games as well. I think this group that might be forming here in starting in February might help us with that, because I think a lot of the folks that might come to that would be more Euro style gamers. I would really like to play more meaty stuff this year. Like I've seen us sort of take a de-emphasis for those games that take 3 or 4 hours to play. Mm-hmm. And we've given lots of reasons as to why we do that, you know, just where we are in our lives and everything. But maybe through this gaming group, I'd like to be able to carve out some time where, you know, I'm going to sit down on a Tuesday night and say, you know, I'm going to pull out Rune Wars. Or I'm going to pull out, find one player, play Twilight Struggle, you know, something that's, you know, a good 3 hours long and is a good, rich experience. Cause I feel like I'm shying away from those games too much. Now I don't necessarily want to buy those games because they're just not going to get to the table that much. But if I have friends that own them and, you know, are interested in playing them or we can bring them to a group or something, I'd like to do that. Cause I think that I'm missing out on those, you know, more complex, rich games. And I'd like to just give those more of a try. So what else for 2011?
Again, and this is more of an RPG one, kind of like what I did last year. I want this to be the year if I decide to do the big world building project. Now, I was cut
from Cody Land.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to call it. I came from a first and second edition AD&D education. You know, that was the game system that I played in. And James Gasaway, the guy we interviewed way back when, had this wonderfully detailed campaign world that he had done for D&D. And then we played all the games in that world. And it was just so well done. And I kept feeling, you know, when he moved away that, you know, I was the one who picked up the torch to kind of keep the gaming group going, which, you know, I host the games and, you know,
yeah.
Again, not to be arrogant, but, you know, I'm kind of getting everyone together and trying to hold the line.
Yeah. So to speak. You got the finger in the dam. That's yeah.
And I find there's always this struggle with me where, you know, have more of the rules heavy, tactical type stuff, like, you know, D&D in one hand, even if it's older editions or like Castles and Crusades, you know, that's still heavier than, say, Hex or, you know, any of the Ubiquity system games. So, and I feel like I need to pick one, you know, it's like, which one do I want to do? I'm almost Jones theoring my RPG. It's like, do I want to do the Ubiquity stuff well, or do I want to finally take the dive and do that campaign world idea? So I don't know. I've been thinking on that, and I think this is the year. It's been years I've been thinking about it. It's like, do I want to commit to this, or would I be better off using my creative juices in another way?
Mm.
So kind of an odd goal, but you know, yeah. I kind of want. I'm a. If you know me in person, I'm pretty indecisive. I'll waffle on what I like, what I don't like on an hourly basis. But I'd like to make a final call on this and move on from there.
Cody Land is born.
Cody Land. there's a big mascot of me. Hey,
welcome to Cody Land.
Have a lollipop.
That's kind of creepy.
What about you?
Oh, one other thing I want to do is my son is going to be 8 this year.
He's getting close.
And so he's hitting that point now where he already, and I hate being that parent because I always hated that parent when I was younger, but, my son is reading at a fifth grade level. He's in the second grade, and he got tested at a fifth grade level. So I'm a proud
papa. Dude's smart. Yeah. Smart little dude.
But it's one thing if he's, you know, really good at athletics or he's good at math or whatever. But the fact that he's reading at this level, I mean, really opens up a lot of games. Because, you know, games, understanding the rules is one thing. But just being able to read the cards and things like that, that's usually a huge barrier for kids. And so he reads at such an advanced level now. I mean, there's really nothing you can set down in front of him that he's just going to say, I can't read that, you know. And so I'm really interested in getting him involved in some more games. He's come to me for a couple of years now. And he's like, you know, he'll see me working out the rules to a game that you and I are going to play. And he'll say, you know, well, Daddy, what are you working on here? And I'm like, oh, I'm learning how to play this game. And he's like, well, how is it? You know, how do you play? Can I play too? And then I always kind of give him the, you know, pat on the head. I'm like, well, son, you know what, this game is for grown-ups because it, you know, the rules are a little bit too complex, but you know, we'll, and I'm not trying to be condescending to him, but I'm trying to let him understand that, man, just wait a couple more years and we'll get in on this. And so I think this could be the year that'll open the door to a lot of games. I've got, you know, he's been able to play things like, you know, Memoir 44 pretty easily. That's one recently that we've played that he's done real well at. But a lot of the games that require reading, like Magic the Gathering, I think I could probably even at this point possibly teach him how to play some basic Magic the Gathering stuff, even at 8. So we'll see.
Cool.
Yeah, I think he's got the potential to get into the hobby. So we'll see. So I want to try to do that a little bit more. Anything else?
My final one would be, you know, now that I've said it, I've got my collection set, you know, I'll add a few games probably. I'll see some things I like. I want to really work on repeat trips to the table.
Hear, hear. Yeah. I'll just go ahead and say that was my last one, mm-hmm. too, is repeat trips to the table. So go ahead.
Yep. It seems like with games lately, I always have to do not just a quick rules refresh, but it's like I have to read the rules again. You know, I was looking I just picked up a few Days of Wonder games I've played a bunch of times, like Cleopatra and the Society of Architects.
Yeah.
And that I had to read through the rules again. So I'm going to table these games. As an aside, did you see the thread on Board Game Geek where a guy wanted to replace the word play with table instead of saying, I'm going to play Battle Lore? No, I'm going to table Battle Lore. And he was dead serious. He's like, play is a childish term. We need to say table.
That doesn't make any sense. It's like if I'm in a meeting at work, mm-hmm. and we say we're going to table the discussion, that means you stop the discussion.
Right.
So to me, that doesn't make any sense.
He's saying you're taking it to the table, therefore you are tabling it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he got pretty blasted for it, but that was a dumb idea. But I want to, in honor of...
He probably listens to our show. We're going to get a bunch of emails.
Sorry, now. Dude. That's a dumb idea. But in honor of him, I want to table games more often.
Okay. Yeah. I agree, because, yeah, there's too many games that... you mentioned you want to do Through the Ages again to compare, mm-hmm. with Civilization. I pulled Through the Ages out a week or so ago, set it up, and looked through the rules again. Dude, it's going to take forever for us to... We'll play it again, but it's going to be just like we played it for the first time, because I've forgotten all the rules, and that's annoying. And I'm the one who teaches all the games, so it's really annoying for me. So yeah, let's endeavor to do that.
Well, there you have it.
2011. So, you know, you can't really hold us to any of these things. So
we did all right last year.
We try to keep to them and everything. And so, you know, we would encourage you to look at your gaming hobby and you know, figure out what do you want to do this year that's different. What horizons do you want to explore that you haven't before? You know, we've gotten into things like miniatures games. This year on the show, we're going to be doing a whole episode devoted to war games.
It's really coming. We promise.
No, it is. Yeah. And we're going to do a whole thing on train games. And like we have in previous years, we're going to try to broaden our horizons and get into some things that we've never done before and share with you, because we want to encourage you to expand your horizons in the hobby as well.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, you know, if you want to email us or call us, let us know your New Year's gaming resolutions. You know, right here on the show, we asked, I asked on Twitter to get some responses, so we'll see what we get there. But we'd love to hear what kind of gaming resolutions you're going to put forward in the new year.
Yep, and you know, we haven't mentioned it earlier, but we have a guild on BoardGameGeek.com that you can go and search for that has all of our forums, and you can start a forum thread and let us know what your resolutions are for 2011. Great community of folks there. So, so have a great 2011, and you know, get out there and game.
Absolutely. Well, that concludes another what we hope to be great episode of Game On with Cody and John.
It was fantastic.
I'd say so.
The best one all year.
I'd say what? we thank you for listening, and Wayne will tell you all the ways you can contact us on the way out. We do want to mention that you can visit us at gameonpodcast.com. That's our home on the web. You can see all of our featured links, and there's a donation button. Again, everything that's put in the show goes right back to you, and that helps us with hosting costs and equipment costs and all these other things. And
getting games in, going to conventions and things like that. It really helps to defray those costs, and we appreciate it. You know, people vote with their listening, you know, like by downloading the show. You also vote with your dollar. So we'd appreciate any support you could throw at us.
Absolutely. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. We're back on our normal schedule, so do not fear.
That's right.
And until next time,
game on.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on BoardGameGeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Game On Podcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On.